You're listening to Nick Luck Daily, bringing you the latest news and the best interviews from around the world of horse racing. This episode is brought to you by the Racehorse Owners Association, by Thoroughbred Racing Commentary's Global Rankings in partnership with the Saudi Cup, and by the Fitzdares Club. Good morning, welcome to the show. Thank you for listening. It's Wednesday, June the 9th. It's another glorious day here in TW11. It really is T-shirts and shorts weather here in the UK. Hope you enjoyed Wesley Ward's input yesterday. We've got more Royal Ascot trainers on the way in today's episode. James Fanshawe tells me that he could well be debuting Ordaria for the season in the Prince of Wales Stakes. That's his Breeders' Cup filly and mare Turf Heroine from Keeneland last year. And he also has news of a potential jockey booking for her as well. And he brings you an update on the Tin Man, who he had to retire last week with quite a serious injury, but he's recovering well, which is good news. I'll also be talking to French trainer Francois Rojo, who's gone close a couple of times at Royal Ascot, and he could go closer still this time with the very smart filly Sueza in the Commonwealth Cup. I've been catching up with him at his base in France. But first of all, we'll take a look back to last weekend and the Derby, and a slightly disappointing viewing figure released today for the Derby. Lee Mottershead is a self-confessed devotee of TV ratings and viewing figures. He's been following them very closely, and he's my guest this morning. Lee, how worried should we be about the viewing number for the Derby?
Yeah, so it's not a great number at all, really, and it does basically follow a trend for the Derby, a race that we as racing fans all adore it, but I think there have been question marks over the public's connection with the Derby in recent years. And that certainly seems to follow on with the number we've got for this year. Just as a bit of context, Nick, as a bit of a sad TV ratings geek, I've got these traced back to 2006, which is a long time ago now, but that was the BBC era. So from 2006 to 2012... BBC got peak Derby viewing figures of 4.1 million, 3.1, 3.0, 2.8, 1.9, 3.2, 3.3. So they do go up and down. They're quite volatile depending on the weather, depending on what else is going on. Channel 4's 4 years are 2.0, 1.6, 1.5, 1.4. So well done on the BBC's. ITV's 5 years, 1.7, 1.8, 1.7, 2.3, and then most recently 1.3 million. So Saturday's Derby was the lowest Derby audience really of the modern era, and potentially of any television era, really. Last year was good, there was a spike, but that was the COVID year, and I think a lot of numbers went up. But the brutal fact is that people do not come to the Derby and watch it as a significant sporting event. It doesn't have that sort of hold anymore. The FA Cup finals the week before got 9.1 million viewers in some sort of context. The Cheltenham Festival this year, again, in more of a deep COVID era, but midweek, every day that had a peak viewing audience that was higher than the Derby. So the Derby's connection with the public isn't quite what it used to be. Now, I know the Jockey Club are looking at this. They're not sitting quiet on it. They recognise that work needs to be done. I think next year you will see the sort of promotion behind the Derby, both from within ITV and the Jockey Club, that we didn't get this year, because next year is going to be such a special year with the Derby forming part of the Queen's Platinum Jubilee celebrations. So I think next year we will hopefully see a bit of a fillip, but the trend for the Derby, and I say its hold on the public, is only at the moment going one way, and that is something that has to be addressed.
Do you think that this, given the strong relationship between the rights holders, RMG and the Jockey Club, and the lessee, if you like, ITV, do you think that their fairly robust relationship will encourage ITV to pull out a few more stops in terms of cross-promotion?
Yeah, I think so that will be the case next year. I think we didn't see a huge amount of it this year. And I think for all broadcasters, I think the one of the problems is that Royal Ascot comes right off the back of it. I think as a TV event, Royal Ascot probably takes precedent. You've already seen a fancy ITV trailer for Royal Ascot, and they'll be giving that full word. I think maybe the Derby suffers a little bit in that regard, and probably also from the fact that racing's crown jewel events are actually quite concentrated. The Cheltenham Festival, the Grand National, the Derby and Royal Ascot come within a relatively short period of time. They are the four biggies, if you like. And I think Cheltenham, the Grand National certainly, and Royal Ascot all trump Epsom, both in terms of TV audiences, but also in terms of the way TV views them. So I think there is an awful lot of work to do. And I would be very surprised if ITV and the Jockey Club both didn't recognise that. Quite what the answer is, I don't know. But it is, I think, really disappointing that the Derby is watched by so few people from one year to the next, albeit that this year's share of the audience was actually pretty good, 12.8%. It was more akin to the shares of 2-3 years ago. So the same sort of percentage of people watching TV are watching the Derby, but you want to see more people watching a race that we so love.
Yeah, and that's the point. You want to have people on a nice day thinking, I've got to get back in time to see the Derby. And exactly. I think that's probably what they've missed. And the audience share is pretty respectable and certainly tallies up with previous shares. But, you know, relatively few people are sitting at home watching the TV. I think the Jockey Club are keen to, for the rest of the summer, see whether this is in keeping with the rest of the nation's sporting viewing habits as we exit lockdown, which is a reasonable way of looking at it. But I think you'd have to have extremely rose-tinted spectacles to think anything other than something needs to be done to promote this great race more effectively and to reach a broader body of the British public, whether it be the sporting public or wider.
I think that's absolutely right. What we need to try and do is work towards getting it back to being seen as a national event. What it used to be is one of those sporting events whereby, a bit like with the Grand National, most of the people who watch the Grand National on television are not horse racing fans. They might dip into horse racing once, twice a year. Now, those same people, not in the same numbers as the Grand National, but they used to watch the Derby in the same way that there will be millions of people who have no interest in rowing, who will watch the boat race once a year because it's deemed to be a national event. And in recent years, and as far back as I've been tracing numbers, the boat race has tended to poll sometimes 2-3 times the number of people who watch the Derby, which to those of us who love horse racing will seem a ridiculous statement. But that certainly has been the case. And for whatever reason, the boat race in more people's eyes is seen as a national event which they should dip into and watch than the Derby. That's what we've got to tackle.
I should pick up a related theme here, because one of the nice things to come out of COVID, if there are any, was that there was quite a bit more racing on network TV on a Sunday, and that's being replicated this year with the Sky Bet Sundays on ITV, entire cards of races. And I just wanted to pick that up with reference to your colleague Bill Barber's column in the Racing Post today, saying that has racing learnt nothing from COVID, because there's still all these congested Saturdays where, frankly, if you blink, you'll miss something and you don't know what's coming at you from where. And there's a general feeling that so much racing on a Saturday is not necessarily good for the overall promotion or portrayal of the sport.
Or for its finances. If you speak to bookmakers, they will tell you that the famous or the infamous Super Saturday in July, when we have the July Cup at Newmarket, a Group 2 card at Ascot, and the John Smith's Cup at York, is actually a pretty bad day for the sport, because it doesn't maximise what it could get in terms of revenues. And punters basically find that it's too much. There's too much on their plate and they're turned off by the meal in front of them. Last year, as Bill makes the point in his column, was a very different sort of year, in the sense that the BHA, certainly over here, had a much freer hand at programming fixtures. And that was influenced by the fact that racecourses felt much more liberated themselves to do what the BHA asked, because they had no one coming in through the gate. So anything that they did was basically only going to be seen by a TV audience and people betting on the races. They had no racegoers, they had no corporate hospitality. None of those factors were involved. So sticking a meeting on a Sunday that used to be on a Saturday was actually grand for them if it was going to do better with betting revenue. I think the problem with the year that we've got now is, it from hopefully from summer onwards, we're going to be seeing bigger and bigger crowds coming back to race courses, and a lot of race courses have tended to find that Sundays just don't work for them as well as Saturdays. For example, one of the Skybet Summer Series meetings is at Sandown, a track just down the road from me, 5-6 miles down the road from me and from Munich. And for whatever reason, traditionally Sundays haven't worked at Sandown. They've got a good winter jumps Sunday, but flat racing on Sundays at Sandown hasn't worked. So it will be interesting to see how that does this year. But certainly I think race courses, if they could be persuaded that Sundays financially weren't going to be bad for them, I think there's a real appetite within ITV to do Sundays, as we've seen through this series and from what we saw last year in terms of British and Irish coverage on Sundays. And I think fans want to see more good racing on Sundays, because all too often the Sunday fare that we get in this country is pretty dross, certainly relative to France and Ireland.
Right. What we can tell you, and it's all good news, is that each of the seven races on each day of Royal Ascot next week will be televised on one of the ITV channels, whether it's ITV or ITV4. They'll also be on Sky Sports Racing. I'll be working with the American network NBC. And so there's every chance you will pick up a race at Royal Ascot somewhere, even if you don't mean to. And that is where we're turning our attentions next. Well, since the back end of last year, one of the horses I've been looking forward to seeing most is Ordaria, who just blossomed beautifully at the back end of last year, culminating in that lovely triumph in the Keeneland Breeders' Cup Filly and Mare Turf. Her trainer, James Fanshawe, is with me now. I can hear the bird song in the background on what must be a beautiful morning in Newmarket, James.
It is a beautiful morning, Nick. It's really nice. And everything's growing, which is great after that cold spring. And the horse is looking a lot better as well.
Fantastic. You just had a little bit of a slowish start, you said, with Ordaria. Is she really coming now the way you'd like her to ahead of Royal Ascot?
No, she looks really well, and she worked nice this morning. All the fillies have struggled a bit this spring, but they're all starting out really well, and you know, especially her.
So she will start next week, will she?
Well, she'll be left in on Thursday, and we'll just sort of see how things go, but she's also in the Pretty Polly the following Saturday, at the end of the month, so at the Curragh. So we've got the two options, but we've got to start somewhere, and it's a Group One, but she's in good form, and we'll see what's left in, and play it by ear.
I mean, is your sort of instinct leaning you that way? Would you fancy it if she was really flying at the end of this week? Is that the way you'd lean?
That's a difficult question at 9:20 on Wednesday morning. I think we've ended up last season. She was very progressive, and it makes it quite difficult to pick your first race. We were going to go to France last week, but I'm glad we didn't, because that was a complete bog out there. It's a lot easier to go to Ascot than to go to the Curragh. So let's see what Ian and how she's up to weekend. And I'll have a chat with Alison Swinburne before then. But, she's in good form. We've got to start somewhere. And you just hope that one day she can take on, the highest grade,
I mean, listen, she is a multiple Group 1 winner against her own sex. I mean, at some point in a horse's career, you just have to go right up to the high board and say, right, let's dive.
Well, that's the thing. Whether it should be first run or later in the year, that's a million-dollar question. And also, I was looking back at sort of previous careers of good older fillies, I think the last one to win it was the Fugue, and she actually beat a filly herself, the first two in the race were fillies, and then you go sort of further back, and sort of Henry's, like sort of Indian Skimmers, and look back all the careers of, and
didn't Ouijabord do something similar, didn't she?
She won it, so but they're going to say, well, anyway, I'm getting a bit deep into this conversation, but we've got to start somewhere. That's the final. And I've been looking at various sort of options, but we've got to start somewhere. And she's in good form.
We like depth on this podcast, James. We don't just like to scratch the surface. I'm pleased that she's in good form. And obviously, given the forecast, what you do know from Keeneland is that she can rattle off that ground quite nicely.
She can, but she also goes in it very, very, you know, she goes on the very soft as well, which she showed in the opera and the Romane. So, you know, she goes on all ground. I wouldn't want it rock hard, but hopefully the second day of Ascot it won't be.
Yeah, what she also showed last season is she can pretty much go for any jockey. She might just be very good. Have you thought about a jockey solution for this season for her?
Well, I think, you know, it's with her, Iritz was going to ride her if she ran in France last week. We've made various sort of approaches. We've approached William Buick to ride if he's about next week.
Excellent. Well, I'm sure he'd be delighted to ride her if he could, because she'd have an excellent chance. I'm looking forward to seeing her. James, how strong would your Ascot team be, do you think, numerically?
we haven't got a very big team at all this year. We've got her, she's a possibility. Then I've got Fresh in the Wokingham, and you know, he wants a bit of rain, but he got up and won at Ascot, actually in the trial that Deacon Blues won in May, and you know, he's in good form, but he definitely wants some rain. Yeah, you know, he wants a cut and grind, loves a bit of cut. So whether we're getting him for next Saturday, we'll see.
And I've got to ask you about the Tin Man, talking about wonderful sprinters that you've trained from very good families. He had an injury recently that meant that you had to draw stumps on what's been a long and glorious career. How's he doing?
Yeah, he's up at the Newmarket Equine Hospital, and they've done a really good job. He's got three screws in his right fore cannon, and he looks, you know, he's got a cast on, and you know, he looks well considering the situation. We've been up to see him a couple of times. He looks, you know, he's comfortable, and it was pleased to see everyone.
Is he being a good patient?
Oh, excellent! Yeah, good. Yeah. He, you know, nothing worries him too much, and I'm just, you know, it's just such a relief that that he's going to be okay. You know, he's going to be, his retirement wasn't far away anyway. But the annoying thing was he was really enjoying his training, and I was hoping to go, you know, for Group Threes this year, and you know, because he was enjoying it so much, and then this happens. But fortunately, he's in one piece for another career.
Well, James Fanshawe there talking about the Tin Man. Good to hear that he's recovering from what clearly is a pretty nasty injury. And really interesting news, Lee, that Ordaria could yet well make her seasonal debut right in at the deep end in the Prince of Wales. James obviously cautious, and that could be a big ride for William Buick.
Yeah, and it'll be great to see her. We've had a few false dawns in terms of seeing her on the track this year, and the Prince of Wales Stakes would be enhanced by her presence. It's one of those races that at the minute you look at the potential field and there's a degree of uncertainty. I think Lord North will almost certainly be there. The John Gosden trade speed, they were so impressive last year under James Doyle, producing a great turn of foot to win. But then you've got Love and Armory in there for Aidan O'Brien. One would imagine he'd run one of those two. I still wouldn't be surprised if Love was kept back for the Pretty Polly at the Curragh. Dave, the way the weather forecast looks at the moment, Nick, you'd be surprised if conditions...
He's not going to be running.
No, he's not going to be going, is he, with the weather as it is. And you then look down and think, well, actually, this is a pretty, pretty winnable race. Well, it's certainly an opportunity worth going for. So I think it'd be great news if she ends up at Royal Ascot in the Prince of Wales.
Well, here's the thing. The top-rated horse in the race is a Dave. We don't think he'll run if the ground's quick. Lord North is the next top-rated on 123. Ordari is 117. Getting the weight, getting the filly's allowance. So it doesn't put her too far away. And we know she handles the ground quite well. We know she's got a turn of foot. James mentioned Ouija board there and mentioned the fugue. I've got to say, I'd be quite tempted.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I certainly think with a horse like that she's a Breeders' Cup winner. She's a horse who's almost certainly still improving. Realistically, if you look at the big mile and a quarter Group One races that we have ahead of us through the summer, this is going to be, with the best will in the world, almost certainly a weaker and more winnable race than the Eclipse, than the Jedwan International, than the Irish Champion Stakes. So if you're going to have a crack at one of a mile and a quarter, I think this is certainly the one to go for.
Right, who are likely to be the heroes of Ascot Week as you sit here now, Lee?
Well, I think the race that I'm most looking forward to, and I'm pleased to say this, is the Gold Cup, because the Gold Cup should be the race you look forward to most at the Royal Meeting. I think potentially we've got a fabulous Gold Cup in front of us. Obviously, you've got the main storyline being Stradivarius seeking to emulate Yates by winning a fourth Gold Cup. It was positive to read of his encouraging July racecourse gallop yesterday. But you've got potentially real class horses up against him, including Subjectivist, Trushan, who was so impressive on Champions Day last year. Spanish Mission won the Yorkshire Cup. A potentially very strong challenge for a maiden O'Brien that includes Santiago, Tiger Martha, also I can't pronounce, Amran Nabifan, who ran in close up in last year's derby.
You've got Naveen.
That's the one, yeah. That's you did a far better job of that than I did. Sorry, Jim Boulder as well. He'd be greatly offended too, wouldn't he? Twilight Payment, the Melbourne Cup winner. I mean, we could have the first and second from last year's Melbourne Cup, Twilight Payment and Tiger Moth in the race. So I think it looks like a really absorbing Gold Cup. So I'm greatly looking forward to that. I'm looking forward to seeing the meeting kick off with one of the star draws of the 5 days, Palace Pier, in the Queen Anne Stakes. I'm really excited about seeing Bay Bridge step into group company in the King Edward VII Stakes. Probably not so excited about the three-year-old mile group ones. I don't think the three-year-old milers have been wonderful in 2021. So I just hope the St. James's Palace and the Coronation Stakes are these competitive affairs. Two-year-old wise, Flotus is the one who's excited me most so far this year, Nick. One at Goodwood for the Crisfords. Really keen to see her go in the Albany Stakes. Listen to Wesley Ward on the pod. Got my juices flowing about Wesley's horses. Bay Bridge, as I said, in the King of the Seventh. Great to see him going to group company. And then there's going to be loads of interesting handicaps. And particularly at this point, I'm always thinking, what is Willie Mullins going to run in the Ascot Stakes? What's Ryan Moore going to ride for Willie Mullins in the Ascot Stakes? And we're talking now at 10:30. I suspect by about 1 o'clock, we should know which one is the one. And of course, maybe Batash back in the King Stand Stakes as well. So it's going to be marvellous, Nick.
It is going to be marvellous. The weather looks good as well. What we won't have is too much representation from France. It's difficult to get the people over as much the horses. We will have one or two, though. One very interesting one is the filly Sueza for the Commonwealth Cup, daughter of Knight of Thunder. She's trained by Francois Rouault, who's had a couple of near misses at Ascot with Turtle Bowl and with Signs of Blessing. I've been speaking to him from his base in France, and he began by giving me a bit of background on this beautiful filly owned by George Strawbridge.
This filly was first trained last year by Carlos Lafont-Parias. She won twice for him, first time out, Maiden, and then she won the listed Prix Yakovlev very easily, the two races in very soft going. And Mr. Strawbridge bought her during the winter and sent it to me. And she kept improving, winning the Sigi for her first outing this year, very easily by 3.5 lengths. And then she won again the Texanita over 6 furlongs in Chantilly, another Group 3. And she won again by 3.5 lengths. So we can't ask her anymore right now.
She's a perfect 4 from 4 at the moment. All of her winning has been done on either an easy surface or a very soft surface. Do you think she'll cope with better ground?
No. When she won the CG, it was good. Good, no more. The three other races were in soft, but I prefer her on good going.
And she is a daughter of Knight of Thunder, but there's a lot of speed in her pedigree. Is she just out and out speed? Is she a sprinter through and through?
We give her half a furlong more last time, but I'm pretty sure she can stay 7 furlongs. We thought at one time to run her in the French Guinness, but we didn't try. We thought it was crazy, and as she's so well over this distance, and we had the Commonwealth in our mind, we kept her on 6 furlongs, but I'm pretty sure she'll go a bit further.
So that stiff 6 furlongs at Ascot should be perfect for her.
Yes, yes, I'm not worried. I know the track. We had runners in overseas distance stands like Signs of Blessing. And I'm pretty sure she'll cope with a long straight and a uphill straight.
And in terms of the horses that you've trained in recent years, and you've had a lot of very talented horses that you've campaigned around the world, how does she match up? How talented do you believe she is?
We don't know. She never got beaten. She's improving every time. She's very quiet and easy filly. She eats well. She's a lovely filly. And we don't know where she can go. Every race is better than the one before.
You mentioned Signs of Blessing. You came to Ascot with her a number of times and ran with great credit. Possibly the best run was that third behind Twilight Sun in the Diamond Jubilee, when I think inside the final furlong I was pretty convinced he was going to win the race. That must have been a pretty exciting day for you.
Yes, it was like Turtle Ball before in the Queen Anne when he got beat nose on nose a few years ago. And it's always a great moment for us to come to Ascot. It's a shame we won't be able to attend this year, but the filly will be there, and that's the most important thing.
So you're not allowed to come because of the restrictions, is that right?
Yes, right now we can't go. We have to make 10 days in an hotel in England and 7 days back home, so it's too long and I can't leave the stable just for a filly. And I know everybody will take care of her and she'll be okay, and all is done for her journey to be the safer possible.
And so who will pick her up on this end? Who will look after her in England?
Everything's organized. We have a French guy living in England who will take care of her. My daughter will go. She's at the moment with Sir Matt Prescott, and she'll go racing that day. And James Wigan, the manager of Mr. Strawbridge, will be there also. So there will be a good team around her.
Francois Rojo, whose Suessa is around about 11-2 shot for the Commonwealth Cup next week at Ascot. And continuing our international theme, we head to Hong Kong now and pick up all the news with Jay McGrath.
Nick, another 9 races under the lights at Happy Valley this Wednesday, and it could be as good as a benefit meeting for Zach Purton, the champion jockey, who's all but let go of his crown into the grasp of Joe Moreira, the magic man. But before we discuss that, a mention of the £10 million Triple Trio jackpot that was finally won at Sha Tin last Sunday. The Triple Trio is the bet that asked punters to pick the first 3 horses home in 3 nominated races on the same card. Compared to previous weeks, it was relatively simple, but still, there were only 46 Hong Kong dollars worth of winning tickets from the pool of over 106 Hong Kong million dollars. The winning dividend was 23 million Hong Kong dollars, which is around about 2.3 million pounds. The beauty of pool betting, provided you have an army of punters such as you can find in Hong Kong. No such monster dividends to be had at the Valley this Wednesday, but there will be winners to be found, and I'm tipping that Purton can ride at least 4 of them. Zach is 22 winners behind Moreira, with 10 meetings to go before the season ends in mid-July. His task of winning the championship is near impossible, but don't think for a minute that the blunt-talking Aussie is going to go out with his tail between his legs. No way. I think his best chance comes aboard Summit Cheers in race 4. Summit Cheers is an Aussie 3-year-old who was smart enough to win on his racecourse debut over 5 furlongs at Sha Tin and put a line through his last run when he was beaten by a wide barrier, and that was when tackling 6 furlongs at the New Territories track. Lining up at Happy Valley this time, Summit Cheers has the right profile to win again, so make it race 4, number 2, Summit Cheers, and take him in a tote swinger with ever-reliable number 1, What a Legend. Summit Cheers is prepared by David Hall, an Australian famous for training the great mare Mackaybe Diva to win the first of her 3 and Melbourne Cups. David accepted an offer to train in Hong Kong the following year. That was back in 2004, and he's been training in Hong Kong ever since. He's a good trainer. He does an excellent job nurturing young, unraced types that come to Hong Kong as what they call private purchase griffins. Summit Cheers is typical of them, and so is stablemate Good Buddy, who can also win on this tough card. He goes in race 6, in which I expect him to relish the step up to 1650 metres, which is just over a mile, and I tip him to beat Savvy Kingman, drawn on the inside here and unlikely to make all as he did last time. So, race 6, number 7, Good Buddy, and take him in multiples with number 3, Savvy Kingman. Purton also has great chances with Smoothies, that's race 7, number 9, and also Lucky Moore, which is race 8, number 7. That's all from Hong Kong this week. Good luck, and above all, good punting.
Thanks to Jim, to Francois, to James. Lee Mottershead is still with me. Lee, we've had a good run on the tips this week. Yatesy yesterday and Lydia the day before, both with nice price winners, so no pressure at all.
I'm therefore going to be less minded by the price and more minded by trying to find a winner. As I speaking at about 9-4 about a horse called Sarumi, trained by Richard Hannah and ridden by Ryan Moore in the 3:45 at Haydock. Not many runners at Haydock this afternoon, but there'll be a winner in every race. I'll have the winner of the 3:45 is Sarumi for the Hannon and Moore combo.
Lee, thanks so much. Thank you for listening. Don't forget, if you do enjoy this podcast, please tell your friends, give us a rating and review us. Tell us what you'd like to hear more of. That was Wednesday, June the 9th. We'll see you again tomorrow. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Nick Luck Daily, brought to you in association with Fitzdares, the Racehorse Owners Association, and Thoroughbred Racing Commentary. Thank you.